What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and our special guest today is Lakx Ganapathy. She is the founder and CEO of Unicus Research and also the author of the Unicus Substack. And we have a lot to talk about today because we have got another cockroach. We have got private credit problems, buy now, pay later problems, ABS problems, all the themes that, Lakx, we've been talking about for months now, since the first appearance you made on this channel many moons ago. We've been warning about these topics, and now these stocks are getting killed for exactly the reasons that you've been flagging. So welcome back to the channel. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us again and share your wisdom with us. And before we do anything, it is my pleasure. We really are very lucky to have you on the channel because, you know, you have been more than vindicated by the headlines over these last couple of days. And you know, a lot of that is covered here in your Substack, which I'm showing right now, the Unicus Investor. And you guys will see a link down below in the description to this one. I highly recommend this because, Lakx, you've been all over these stories. And we've got a new one here, don't we? What is this Market Financial Solutions? What is going on over there?
Jack, thanks for having me and thanks for your time. It's hard to keep up with the news. I'll tell you this. There are so many things happening in private credit and companies. And while we are researching a firm yesterday, and we published a new short recommendations, while we were doing that, I got flagged by our team in London. And then I go, here we go again. And, you know, if you've been following the First Brands and Tricolor saga, you already know that the playbook, fast-growing lender, institution money pouring in, then it all unravels with allegations of double pledging, collateral, and the founder of the company stole the money and ran away. It sounds like a movie, and it kind of sad it is. And yesterday, it's not Tricolor, it's not First Brands. And there is a firm called Market Financial Solutions. It's a UK bridging lender with a £2.4 billion loan book and over £2 billion in institutional funding lines. The bank, we heard, that cut the funding to the company. The CEO fled to Dubai and somehow connects with Bangladesh money laundering scheme, right? So the judge cited the evidence of double pledging. So the official version was MFS, Market Financial Solution, applied to enter administration because of a procedural matter with its primary bank, right? So the CEO, Paresh Raja, called it's a technical and procedural impasse. And everything, business was usual, asset-backed or operationally sound. There is a banking glitch, all will be fine. 5 days later, they all ended up in court.
Which is unusual, right? Typically, when a major fraud is exposed, the guy who did it is like, oh yeah, I'm a total charlatan. Yep, everything you suspect is true. Now, they always say, oh, this is nothing big, right? It's just a misunderstanding, a technical glitch. Yeah. We're going to be fine here. Never mind the fact the guy fled to Dubai, really. So he ran.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, the bridging lender is, to clarify to the listeners, the kind of firm that makes short-term high-interest loans to people so people can buy the property fast, renovate it fast, or bridge a gap until they secure a longer-term financing. So MFS as a fancy payday lender of property finance, except the loans are secured against the real estate and clients tend to be the investors and developers rather than the consumers.
Okay, so these are short-term loans, high-interest loans, right? You know, oh yeah, I have all the collateral here. I just need money to complete these transactions. I'll pay you back next Tuesday. But we're hearing about double pledged collateral again. So borrowing against the same property twice.
So
exactly what First Brands did, right?
Yes. And the business model is very simple and it works as long as it works. And then one day it doesn't work. So the simple process, imagine you originate bridging loans, secure them against UK property, then fund them through a web of special purpose vehicles that tapped institutional capital markets. So by March 2025, MFS said it had upsized and extended multiple institutional funding lines, securing up to another £1 billion in additional capital. So Raja, the CEO, was targeting around £3.5 billion loan book within 1 year. The growth was aggressive. And he was pledging the same property twice. As always, Infos Brands or any other the frauds, the auditors did not do the job in a correct way. So the double pledging kept going on.
So that's interesting. Common themes we've seen, the double pledging, the auditors missed it.
Yeah.
Now, there's an interesting note because this is double pledged collateral, but it turns out this collateral should never have been pledged even the first time because this is a fraud. And, you know, you wrote about this in your Substack piece, and I started to see hints of this yesterday as I started researching this. I want to scroll all the way through. By the way, all the companies that are caught here, Jefferies, Apollo, Clear Lake, these are all the same firms that are gating their firms or cutting their dividends in their business development companies. These are all the private credit firms that are assuring us that everything is well, even though they keep losing money in the same schemes over and over again. Almost makes you think there's no risk management at all going on in these firms.
What risk management?
Yeah, what risk management? We solved our risk management problem. We don't have any.
We don't have any.
But, you know, there tends to be something juicy in the last paragraph of a Bloomberg article, I've always found. And this one did not disappoint. A Bloomberg investigation in 2024 showed that a group of firms tied to Raja, that's the founder and CEO of MFS, including MFS and Zircon, lent money in relation to dozens of property deals linked to Saifuzzaman Chowdhury, a former land minister in Bangladesh. Chowdhury had amassed a real estate portfolio of more than 350 properties worth £200 million, Bloomberg reported at the time. And this story just blew my mind when I went and looked at this Saifuzzaman Chowdhury guy. If you could bear with me a little bit, I found this article from late last year in October. Ex-land minister's family accused of $2.5 billion. I think this is taka is the name of the currency in Bangladesh. $2.5 billion taka loan fraud using poor villagers' identities. And what this Bangladeshi land minister's family did is during COVID, they went to all these poor towns and they were ostensibly signing people up for these COVID stimulus programs, a job program or money from the government. They made these people sign documents written in English that they didn't understand. They took their government-issued IDs and left for a week, bought them back like a week later. And it turns out what they were actually doing was signing these people up for mortgages. And these people had no idea until they started getting delinquency notices from banks they had never heard of, written in languages they didn't understand.
Yep, that sounds about right.
So again, when we're talking about risk management and the rigorous lending standards and due diligence that the folks at Jefferies and Apollo are doing.
Yep.
How do you verify this?
You don't. The same thing happened in 2007, 2008. Anybody with the pulse can get loans. And that's happening even now slowly. No, not slowly. I misspoke. That's happening even now in the auto sector, where if you have a pulse, you get an auto loan, like down payment $100 or $500. You get an auto loan. There are several modifications. It's happening. And as we said when Tricolor and First Brands happened, these are not isolated incidents. These happen to be exposed. So if you take a step back, in September 2024, Al Jazeera investigative unit dropped a bombshell. I think that was the first one, if my memory serves right. And I can't spell this guy's pronounce this guy's first name. So Chaudhry, a Bangladesh former land minister, like you said, accumulated property worth more than $500 million in London, Dubai, New York, everywhere. And you know what his salary was?
$13,000.
Yep. So
there was an interesting thing there, if I could pause you, because when you are doing loans to a foreign government official in the UK, you're required to fill out this PEP attachment, right? Politically exposed person. It's part of the required notifications that you're supposed to make whenever you're doing business or making loans to people who could be potentially doing fraud. Yes. And this Market Financial Solutions didn't do any of that. They just didn't do it. They broke the law.
Yep. And if you connect the dots, MFS, primary banking provider, restricted access to its account in early 2026. And that's when Raja said, oh, it's a procedural matter. But under the UK anti-money laundering regulation, banks are legally required to file the suspicious activity reports. And that's what happened. And that's what unraveled all of this mess.
So you got double pledged collateral that shouldn't have even been pledged once because they were fraudulent mortgages taken out by a corrupt government official in Bangladesh, bankrolled by a private lender in the UK who got his money from private credit firms in the United States, Jefferies and Apollo, who got their money from the big banks in the United States, who have CEOs like Jamie Dimon that are out in the press warning us of cockroaches, when ultimately you'll find, where's the source of this money? Jamie Dimon and his banks.
I mean, it was not popular when I said that, but we said, Jamie doesn't have the right to say about cockroaches because he has no clue what's going on under his own house, which apparently seems like engaged in all kinds of cockroach activities. And the people who's exposed is the investors Barclays reported exposure, hundreds of millions of dollars. They are the warehouse lender and arranger. Atlas, which is Apollo, hundreds of millions, warehouse and arranger. Castlelake, 400 million pounds in notes. Santander, and they didn't disclose it. Jefferies, 100 million pounds. Wells Fargo, undisclosed. This for Jefferies, this has to be a deja vu. Like, at this point, I'm surprised this company exists.
Yeah, and folks like you and I, we get called doomers all the time. And I love it, by the way. I love when they call me a doomer. Doomer. I wear that on my sleeve in invisible ink because, as I like to say, it's okay to yell fire in a theater if the theater is actually on fire.
That is true.
And the theater is on fire in private credit now. We have seen story after story over the last few weeks that has completely vindicated your magnificent doomerism, Locks. And again, I use the firm in a positive context.
Thank you. And when people say, oh, don't you look on the bright side? I said, of course I look on the bright side, but I don't have denial. Like, the denial in our economy runs so deep that there is a wide crack in private credit. There is extend and pretend in commercial real estate, extend and pretend in auto sector. Consumers are strapped in, and the private credit that is funding the BNPL, which is helping the consumers so far to bridge the days from one paycheck to the next paycheck, it's probably down the road is in trouble as well, because this illiquid feeder, which is private credit to the buy now pay later, is showing problems.
And it turns out this isn't even the only case, right? And I learned this yesterday as well. I had never even heard of this. Why am I finding out about this from bridgingsoup.com? Not from Bloomberg and CNBC.
That is because I will share that with you. When First Brands happened, and I can share that in my Substack. So we have sources all over in London, in Asia, in the United States, in the auto sector, and they deal with warehouse financing, auction houses, and everything. So we heard that First Brands was down to their last penny on their DIP financing. They've been spending more than $15,000 a day or so on a legal fees. And as soon as we heard it, we corroborated with another source, and then we published an article in First Brands breaking the news, right? We are not in the news business, but we were breaking the news because we want people to know that there is a problem and the First Brand is going is ran out of DIP financing. And we also cited there were rumors that they will be rescued by Ford and GM and whatnot. And we said that we are hearing from credible sources that that's not going to happen. And I did share with a couple of reporters and nobody published it. It took a week from when we broke the news for it to appear in Bloomberg. So I always
If
tell
I could
our
clarify real quick,
sure.
when you talk about DIP financing, that's debtor in possession for folks who don't live in this space all day. That's basically after First Brands had gone belly up, they borrowed more money for this DIP financing, debtor in possession. It's a short-term loan while we sort the books. Here's some money to get you through the next few months while you sort things out. And so you had broke the story that they had exhausted their DIP financing. And that no bailout was coming.
And we also said there is going to be a layoffs, we heard, and that's the last paycheck that they can offer. And we did share with a couple of reporters, and nobody published. We published on our Substack. A week later, we are hearing the news. I'm like, why are you publishing the old news? This goes to say that why you're seeing Century Capital collapses into the administration in bridging soup rather than Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. I mean, look, I try not to knock these guys too much, and it's a futile effort because this is inexcusable. When I found out about this MFS story yesterday, I find out in this second, third rate website that MFS is the second bridge financer to go bankrupt in a month in the UK, that this Century Capital had collapsed at the end of January, and that executives at this company had been jumping ship for months, including the CEO who resigned shortly before this collapse. And even to this day, there is nothing about Century Capital anywhere in mainstream financial press. So Market Financial Solutions is making headlines today. They are the second story. They're bigger than Century Capital. I mean, Central Capital is about a tenth the size. But, any minute now, they're going to tell us, don't worry, there's no risk, and that this is an isolated event when this is
Of
the second
course.
time in a month it's happened, just like First Brands was isolated and Tricolor was isolated.
And Tricolor, as I think millions disappeared. And as far as we know, it's not recovered. And First Brands, $2.3 billion disappeared. As far as I know, it's not recovered. And now this one, MLS, I think it's MFS, is roughly 1.3 billion. I'm not sure. I remember reading it somewhere this morning. And what's going to happen next is Alex Partners has is sorting through the wreckage. And I think the first priority for them is going to figure out what's actually there, what loans exist, what loans are performing, who gets the claim first, what are the core allegations. And this is like a huge task. And Alex Partners apparently has that, unenviable job of sorting this crap out. The second priority, they should be following the money. And the court heard that the bank accounts meant to receive mortgage collections were irregularly managed. So that begs the question, where did the cash go? Right?
I don't think there ever was any cash because these were fraudulent mortgages in the first place, right? The Bangladeshi thing. So no payments were ever being made, I think, on any of these loans.
None. And for lenders, again, they are holding the bag. The recovery question is, so usually with a property-backed lender, the real estate underneath it provides the decent floor, but double pledging blows it up. So we've been saying that even for MFS and Tricolor and First Brands, when people are calling isolated incidents, I'm 100% sure behind the scenes, everybody who is holding this bag on the credit side is freaking out. They're like, are we really holding what we think we are holding? Does it have any value? And the collateral that's backing this, does it even exist? Everybody should be asking that question. And this is the third incident that we know of. And I'm sure some of them are trying to just fix things behind closed doors. But how many are there? Why are auditors not questioning this?
I mean, I would add Carioc Capital to the list also. It didn't get nearly as much exposure as Tricolor and First Brands, but that was Bonken Brombot's fraudulent collateral that he created fake receivables. And that was, I think, $400 million exposure for HPS Partners like a week after BlackRock bought them. Nice due diligence there on that acquisition.
Well, I don't think anybody does due diligence, Jack. If due diligence were to be done, I mean, when I started in this industry, I was a little bit naively idealistic and thinking, oh, big banks, JP Morgan, they are like doing their due diligence. But if JP Morgan did their due diligence, we would not have Daniel Chu. Because they would have found out Daniel Chu did the same thing with Paco and got kicked out. Right?
Daniel Chu, CEO of Tricolor, you're referring
Tricolor,
to, correct?
Tricolor, yes, yep. Yes. And here is that, as we continue to say asset-backed lending and asset-backed securities, the credit side is the catalyst, right? So the private credit confidence in the private asset-backed lending was already shaky. Now it's gone with the MFS.
This is now, one of the things that was that stuck out at me with the MFS story is I found out that MFS actually was a group of companies, several subsidiaries, and that one of MFS's subsidiary companies was also the servicer on the loans that they were issuing. So the people who were responsible for collecting the payments and reporting the delinquencies or not was owned by the same company that was making these fraudulent loans. And of course, that is a huge vulnerability, right? When the same company that issues the loans is servicing the loans, you've got an incentive structure to misreport your delinquencies.
True.
And I couldn't help but be reminded of everybody's favorite used car company, Carvana. Because Carvana, in some of the recent short reports by companies like Hindenburg Research and more recently Gotham City Research, they pointed out that Carvana, not only do they issue loans and then sell them to a related party, DriveTime, that's owned by the CEO's father, but the servicer of Carvana's loans is a company called Bridgecrest, which is also owned by the CEO's father. So we could have misreported delinquencies going on there. And, you know, you also have to wonder about the possibility of double pledge collateral over there if there's all these other potentially shady things going on. I mean, is there a chance that Carvana could be doing the same thing, double pledging collateral?
I've been asked this question before, so I will answer it as diplomatically as I can. There is a high chance, and we said this after Tricolor and First Brands, there is a high chance that many lenders in the auto industry and parts industry are double pledging the collateral. One of the reasons we believe that is that when the auditors are auditing these pool of loans, they audit the sample. We are not sure whether the sample is given by the lenders to say, audit this and sign off, or they randomly select it. We believe that the sample is given by the lenders to the auditors, and the auditors audit the sample, which obviously is free of double pledging, and they sign off. We will believe that this is an isolated incident when all the lenders open their books to their auditors and the auditors perform a thorough audit for all the loans in the pool, not just the sample. And then if they choose to verify, okay, this is free of double pledging, then we will believe that double pledging incidents like Tricolor, First Brands, and MFS is isolated. Until then, we are under the belief that most lenders are probably double pledging.
Wow. So if I could distill that down, the auditors supposedly audit these loans, but they only audit a sample, a supposedly random sample. So they would have to catch the same collateral twice in the same random sample. So the odds of them catching double pledge collateral just by the nature of auditing only a sample are very much reduced. Then you factor in that the lenders themselves are choosing the samples, which is a massive conflict of interest. Then it becomes like zero chance they're going to catch the double collateral because the lender is only going to pick the ones that show, yeah, everything is great. You know, look here, not here. And so because of that, the only safe assumption is that everybody is doing this. And therefore, you have to assume until proven otherwise that there is collateral fraud going on in the ABS market, which is a pretty frightening proposition. But I can tell you as a nuke who always assumes the worst in every scenario, that's part of my nuclear training, I'd say you're right on the money with that conservative approach.
Yeah.
And you've been right. You've been very right so far on that.
And one thing that concerns, like we are looking at the asset-backed securities loan pool and the deterioration in near real time, is that now the collateral is a depreciating asset. Now, the pool of loan, the average pool of loan has an LTV of more than 125 to 130%, at least in vintages, which means the pool of loan is upside down, has negative equity. So you have a negative equity depreciating asset collateral that probably double pledged. What are they holding?
There's no silver lining here, is there? Or the only silver lining is that people haven't largely discovered this yet, I guess. Is that the silver lining? I mean, give me something positive here, Locks. The good news is there's no good news. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, no, there is the silver lining is everybody, the investor side and the lender side need to, our auditors need to get off the denial and do their job, and you will have a huge mess. Sort out the mess, start it all over again, and do it as you're supposed to do it. Then there is a silver lining. There is a hope, right? When that hope can happen, when all these can be corrected. You can't extend and pretend. You can't continue to do what you're doing and expect any kind of lining. So we need to, you know, when you're raising a kid, you need to let the kid fall down, learn from the mistakes. And then that's when they grow stronger. That is the one thing that is a silver lining. If they're not willing to do it, which I don't think they are, then everything is going to break loose.
Well, when you have a central bank and a government that repeatedly socializes the losses every time this happens, the consequences of that fall down, right? Like the helicopter mom is always catching the kid when they fall. So they never learn, don't do that, because they never have the consequences of it. I'm not encouraged that this is going to happen, because I do believe they will eventually somehow in some shape or form. I don't know what they'll call it. They'll create an acronym for it. But they'll spin up the money printers to socialize these losses one way or another. They've done it every other time.
Yeah, but the problem with this time is the tariffs. There is going to be a resurgence of inflation because most manufacturers pre-bought everything last year, mid-2025, and the inventory pool is slowing down, is completely gone. Now they have to get the new inventory, and then they will have tariff cost attached to it. They have to pass the cost through to their customers, and which means they are going to see the price hike. So we are going to have increased unemployment, increased inflation, and
the stag and the inflation.
Yeah. Stagflation. I mean, what kind of GDP we have if you remove the data centers, if you remove the military spending and health insurance? So the silver lining for you is everything needs to be corrected and reality will set in and things will change.
And I don't know if you saw this data or not yet this morning, Locks, but Core PPI completely vindicated this morning what you just said. We got core PPI at 3.6% this morning. It's, by the way, we're recording Friday around lunchtime here. Core PPI came in at 3.6% this morning. The market was expecting 3.0 and up sharply from 3.3. So, you know, that is the producers just starting to pay the tariffs as the inventory from the first quarter of last year has been sold through. And that will eventually either it'll filter through in one of two ways, either in the form of higher consumer price inflation as those costs are passed on, or if, and there is a chance this happens, if companies are unable to pass those costs on because the consumer is hardly in good shape, then we'll see margin compression. You know, companies will eat it in the form of their profits. One of those two things will have to happen with that PPI inflation.
And I'm not naive to believe that the company are going to eat the cost. It will be passed through to the customers. And the cost, it's like the debt is the only way to live. Is no way to live. And that's what's happening. And BNPL is trapping consumers in forever debt.
So that's a great segue there, because that's another topic I wanted to talk about today, was Klarna. Klarna is down a little bit today here, but it's not so much the price action today I want to talk about. It's the price action over the last month, down 45.3% since the start of February. Yikes. And buy now, pay later, Locks, that's a subject that you've been very vocal about.
Something
we've been covering on this channel as well. Again, it looks like vindication here. Klarna posted a big surge in loss provisions in their most recent earnings last week, and the stock took a hit from it. Is the BNPL bird finally coming home to roost here?
Yes and no. So I'm going to be as objective as I can. So the reason Klarna Q4 2025, it's irony is they reported the same day Blue Owl announced their crappy day. But with Klarna, first, the loss stems from, I think, the interlocking factors, right? So the credit provision for losses surged, and they introduced a new product. I don't know if you know it. It's called FAIR Financing. FAIR Financing is a little bit of a very risky upgrade to Pay in 4. Pay in 4, you pay in 4 and just move on with your life. FAIR Financing loans grew 165% year over year in Q4. So their charge off for FAIR Financing is between 3 to 4%. And their Pay in 4 charge offs is less than 1%. Now, to be completely candid, I don't buy either of these charge-offs because they engage in forward flow agreement with the private credit, which means I have no idea how much of this crappy loans or charge-off they are showing it back to private credit. Probably everything, probably some. So I will take these charge-offs with a grain of salt because I don't think it reflects the real number. Right?
I agree with that wholeheartedly, by the way. I think they are hiding the delinquencies. It just the simple logic of the kind of borrowers that use this product, what delinquencies elsewhere in the economy are doing, it just doesn't pass the sniff test.
It doesn't. And if you know, the CFO disclosed a specific example on a $2.5 billion of U.S. FAIR Financing originated in Q4. Klarna booked $80 million in provisions up front, but recognized only $40 million in the revenue.
So they already took $80 million. So how would you recognize only half of that in your revenue? Do they have to make that up in a latter quarter? Or?
So he said the remaining $180 million of interest income comes over the life of the loans, and management called it as deferred value creation.
Okay. So we're just not going to report how many people we expect not to pay us back.
No.
Now, are you familiar with the Klarna glitch method? Well, I have to ask you about this. I think I emailed this to you once. I saw this video apparently in the fourth quarter around Christmas time, a bunch of Best Buy employees started ranting on Reddit that they were seeing wave after wave of people coming in and buying 10 to 15 iPhones and PlayStations all on Klarna.
Wow.
And it turns out there are these guys on TikTok that are selling courses on how to create fake Klarna accounts using stolen identity data. They call them fools, F-U-L-L-Z, to create a fake Klarna account and then go in and buy all these electronics at Best Buy and then flip them for cash at the pawn shop. And if people are filming themselves throwing money up in the air, bragging about how much money they're selling, they're making selling courses on how to commit blatant fraud. By the way, if you're doing that across state lines, it becomes a RICO case, right? Wire fraud charges go in there. And I don't know how much of this, how widespread this was, but if it's happening enough that Best Buy employees in multiple states are sharing their experiences about how rampant it was, the loan loss provisions from Klarna, these are all fraudulent loans. They're never going to get this money back. And you got to assume if these guys are making all this money that at least a few thousand people took the course on how to commit this fraud, that they probably did a few thousand times themselves. That's gross.
That is gross. But here's what it gets interesting. And here's why we are skeptical to short any BNPL firms. Because at the end of the day, the risk we figured lies with the private credit that's funding them. So the forward flow sales adds kind of a complexity. So Klarna initiated its first fair financing. They call fair financing because the interest rate they charge you is relatively cheaper than the credit card interest rate. So initiated its first fair financing forward flow sale in Q4, selling approximately $1.6 billion in loans to Elliott and recognizing $73 million in gain on sale. So it moves risk off Klarna's balance sheet, but it also means that the future revenue from these loans goes to the forward flow investor, in this case, the private credit, which is Elliott, not Klarna. So it's a trade-off that all the BNPL companies are doing it. Capital flexibility now versus recurring income later. So the chances of, so Klarna exists. Klarna and a firm, another BNPL firm exists as long as private credit is funding them. So that's why it gets tricky, because you see, so when you short some companies like Klarna and a firm, you see one aspect of the equation, but you don't see the forward flow agreements and other deals that's happening between the BNPL companies and the private credit.
Yeah, these forward flow agreements. Let me just like walk people through the life of a private credit of a BNPL loan. All right. When you check out with Klarna or Affirm, there is a bank that underwrites the loan, right? Typically banks like, what's the name of this bank in New Jersey? I've done videos about them. I can't remember their name, but Celtic Bank is one of them. Yeah. These banking as a service companies that automatically underwrite the loan. But they have agreements with the buy now, pay later companies where the BNPL companies then immediately buy the loan from the bank. Because a BNPL lender is not a bank, he's not allowed to make the loans. So a bank automatically underwrites it using surely very rigorous underwriting standards, note sarcasm. The BNPL company then buys it right away. Well, these BNPL companies have these forward flow agreements with private credit. A forward flow agreement is where a private credit firm agrees to buy that loan from the buy now, pay later lender almost immediately after issuance. So now the loan, which was immediately bought from the bank by the BNPL lender, goes off to a company like Elliott Asset Management. What do you think Elliott Asset Management does with it? They put it into a bond, an ABS, and they sell it. And who do you think they sell it to? They sell it to your retirement. And at the end of the day, where did this loan come from? At least in large part from these low-level ghetto crooks that are selling courses on how to create fake accounts using your identity to buy PlayStations and iPhones. So you've got all these corrupt financial institutions along the way collecting a fee to create a pipeline to basically loot your retirement dry. And for whatever reason, this is being allowed to happen because it's propping up consumers' spending and keeping the economy artificially looking healthier than it really is. Every facet of this chain is disgusting in buy now, pay later.
It is. And the sad part is the amount of consumers who are relying on BNPL. They're using it as a bridge between their one paycheck to the other. Listen, I will get a lot of pushback, and I do, saying that, well, you know, that's not happening. Well, you know, I don't have the BNPL loan. Well, we are not in a recession. And my comeback to that is, recession from whose perspective? A person who is making $500,000 a year, he is clueless about recession, right? A person who is making $100,000 to $150,000 a year, barely making the ends meet. A person who is making less than $100,000 gets choked between a 50% increase in maintenance for their car, car payment, student loan, groceries, their if there
health
is an emergency,
rent, everything.
So from their perspective, things are really, really bad. And the buy now, pay later is the only thing that keeps them going. And we suspect the funding to BNPL down the road will be throttled, and that will be a problem. And the reason, because it's not because of Blue Owl. Blue Owl doesn't have any BNPL. The problem is private credit by design is meant to function in the shadows. They're not supposed to come in light. They are by design supposed to work behind the scenes. And when Tricolor and First Brand happen, you see the crack. Everybody and their brother starts to talk about private credit. The attention shifts to private credit. You see the crack. There comes some, you know, people are coming in and saying, hey, you know, we have, everything is fine. This is isolated, trying to just mitigate the losses. Around November, there is a failed agreement with the Blue Owl and another company. Then the trust is broken. Blue Owl gets more exposure. Come into January and you have February 19, things are unfolding. So we are not saying, oh my God, this is going to be a huge mess. You know, Blue Owl is a zero. We're not saying that. Blue Owl is not going to be a zero, not for a while, right? We are not asserting anything. What we are saying is, there is a crack in a sector that is distinct to be in the shadows. A lot of people are focusing, asking questions. Then Blue Owl happen, you have this trust expanding, the crack expanding. The question is not about whether Blue Owl will continue to be profitable. The question is, if there is another incident tomorrow or a week from now, similar to Blue Owl or worse than Blue Owl, is private credit equipped to handle that stress? And if they don't, that will cascade into BNPL, because for their funding depends on the functioning of private credit. So
right, without that outlet, right? And this flowchart that you posted on X the other day is beautifully illustrates it. As the problems in private credit start to form, that outlet into the ABS market or the ABL market, where ultimately a lot of these loans end up, starts to get throttled. People start to demand higher interest rates, or, you know, they realize the risk they're taking, and that gets cut off, which means these companies, well, they end up stuck holding the loans, don't they?
Yes, and these companies eventually will go bust, or the people will not have credit. See, the Klarna's entire growth strategy, from our point of view, depends on able to settle the loans in the forward flow structure. The Elliott deal is $6.5 billion over the next 2 years for U.S. FAR financing, plus £30 billion pounds UK capacity, and the Nelnet, that's the student loan deal, $26 billion dollars and pay in full volume are not optional features of the business. They are the business. So people think, you know, Klarna in a firm or lenders, they are like rolling this over. As long as private credit is there, as long as this they are able to flow sell the forward flow structures, they will keep doing this.
It's
So
almost like a pipeline company or a toll booth, right? They
yeah.
facilitate the creation and sale of the loans. Their businesses are not designed to hold on to these loans. They just collect the fees as they pass through. But
Yes.
if that outlet gets clogged up, not only are they no longer have the money they need to keep creating new loans, but now they're stuck eating the losses because traffic is backing up at the toll booth.
Yeah, and that's well put, Jack. If private credit investors continue to face their own liquidity stress, right? I have to be very careful in saying Blue Owl does not have BNPL. I'm not talking about Blue Owl. I'm talking about the crack in the private credit that's widening. If there is another, and KKR cut its dividend, if this were to continue to happen, right? So, which means private credit investors are facing their own liquidity stress from redemption pressures, from software sector losses, or, for whatever reasons, they have to sell the assets to meet the payouts, they have to tap into their revolving line of credit to pay down whatever. They become less willing or able to commit fresh capital to BNPL forward flows. That doesn't mean like whatever is going on right now is collapse overnight. So forward flow agreements are committed in terms, but when it comes to renewal, when you want it to expand and reprice it, it all gets harder. And then, Klarna and Affirm, all the crappy loans will sit on their balance sheet, and that's when they will go down.
Very well said. And you mentioned briefly there in passing that KKR had cut their dividend. I correct me if I'm wrong, you're referring to the fund that is managed by Future Standard and KKR that announced yesterday they were cutting their dividend due to loan losses. There was another similar story this morning, and a business development company run by Apollo is cutting their dividend, marking down assets due to loan losses. That's the same Apollo that just took it on the chin from the Market Financial Solutions bankruptcy in the UK. So, even though Blue Owl got all the press because of the big one when they gated their fund, there's also a drip drip of these other stories of other private credit firms taking losses, cutting dividends, not as extreme as the Blue Owl example, but this is not an isolated case, even though they keep telling us, don't worry, these are isolated events. And boy, a lot of people seem awfully isolated.
Very.
It clearly isn't the case.
I think the deepest risk that nobody is talking about is whatever happening in private credit, nobody can quantify it. It has the opacity problem, like we call it. So you will see all these MFS, first brands, and whatever is tied up to private credit or backed up by private credit. You will see there is a problem when it's little to too late. So there is no public breakdown of non-performing BNPL loans by funding source. There is, there CFPB a long time ago found 63% of BNPL borrowers held multiple simultaneous loans. And I read an article somewhere that people are losing track of what loans they have. And 33% of those consumers borrow from multiple providers. No one can see others' exposure. It's all opaque. And it all somehow makes it to retail investors. All these opening up the 401ks. So, you can have the institution kind of support is all BS. And to be completely blunt, we think that institutions are using retailers as an exit liquidity. And we have been very concerned about private assets, private credit involvement, and integration into 401ks and TDFs, which is target dated funds, supposed to be a safest one. So these are the things that concerns me. At the end of the day, consumers will be retail investors, regular mom and pop will be affected, but not in the ways that they can see this coming.
And
And that's
that's,
what concerns me.
I agree. And I'm so grateful that you're doing this work, Lox, because there are so many sell side quacks out in the financial press that are pushing this onto people, talking about what a great opportunity it is. And even just the other day, I was looking around in my wife's 401k at some of the options that she's offered. And there's these very user-friendly, like sort by lowest risk profile. And then you open up some of the low risk options. And then I go look at that fund and look at the holdings, and it's full of asset securitizations. It's full of ABS. It's full of all of these bonds made up of receivables of consumer debt. That is not a low risk option here.
It's
And people
very
need to
high
be
risk
aware that this
option.
is being done to them. And I want to, I know people in this space lean on The Big Short too much, but I want to remind people of that scene where Christian Bale talks to the guy from Deutsche Bank or whatever bank and says, I think what you mean is you have finally secured a short position for yourself, and now you're willing to mark the value of these things accurately. And what is going on right now is they are marking all of these assets artificially high while selling them to you, the retail investor, and we won't find out what they're really worth until it's too late. So, that's
Absolutely.
why Locks and I are constantly beating on this drum. And that's why the people in the financial services industry will come in and call us doomers, because these are bears masquerading as bulls trying to sell you hot garbage. Be aware that it's going on, folks.
And it's very scary. It's nothing more than Klarna and other BNPL firm is nothing more than payday lenders and pawn shops. It's just they are in a fancy way to come with good intentions, saying that, we are there for you. It's a behavioral pattern, stacking present buyer's illusion of control, illusion of when I use buy now, pay later, I don't have a debt. Most people don't see BNPL as a debt.
I saw a great meme the other day. I don't have it handy, but I'll put it up on the screen. It was a Scooby-Doo meme of, they're pulling the mask off the monster, and it says it shows financial innovation, and then they pull the mask off and it says subprime lending when once the
Yeah,
mask
I
is removed.
remember seeing that.
And that's exactly what's going on here.
That's exactly what's going on. And it's very, for the lack of better words, it's very scary. And these companies, they private credit funds, BlackRocks of the world, whoever that is, they're in business. They will go out of business. And they will come back again and start a different business, no accountability. But a mom and pop store, somebody is taking care of their kid, terminally ill, want to go to a doctor, they are suffering and nobody cares. So when people say, oh, there is no recession, it infuriates me because from whose perspective? I mean, from half a million, you're making half a million dollar a year, I'm sure you don't see a recession. Right. And all these things exposed to Blue Owl or CalPERS and OMERS, they're all a pension fund. Yes, they are sophisticated in managing. Yes, they know the risk. But if you know the risk, why are you suggesting retirement people to put money on it?
It's not their money, right? When CalPERS bought those Blue Owl loans, that wasn't their money they were using. It was their pensioners' money. And also, while Blue Owl was bragging about that $1.4 billion loan sale last week, they forgot to mention it was their own insurance company that bought a lot of it. So private equity firms buying insurance companies just so they can park their own garbage assets into the balance sheets of those insurance companies. That is going on all over the economy too.
And the issue is not like whether the private credit is like a good asset class. Nobody cares. The loans sold at near par, the returns have been solid. The issue is the distribution, right? Private credit has been with BDCs. Don't care. When you start to come to commercial real estate and consumer credit and pension funds, then you have a problem. So you're packaging illiquid assets into a products marketed to retail investors and the retirees with the promise of quarterly liquidity. You have an illiquid assets. What kind of liquidity are you talking about?
Yeah, these are not things that can be easily sold, and the term of the loan is longer than the cash needs of the people buying the debt. And that is a recipe for disaster, even in a good time. That could
Yes.
cause problem, right? And these are not good times for private credit. So,
And
yeah.
what Blue Owl demonstrated is that, isn't there a saying when people tell you who they are, believe them the first time? So the Blue Owl demonstrated is that the retail investors need to understand they are buying illiquid assets inside a structure that promises liquidity but cannot guarantee at all under any kinds of stress.
And that means their
So,
promise isn't worth anything.
no, the promise is probably the quarterly redemption promise is a feature that probably works when everything is calm. And if there is a volatility in the market, institution investors double down and short or take the losses to their chin. But when things go down, retail investors react differently. They want the money back. Their hard-earned money is invested there so they can get so-called the institutional style return. What the people who are selling this crap to the retail investors probably failed to mention is that they are illiquid, highly volatile. Things might go absolutely bad before it could ever go good again. And these guys have their hard-earned money and they want it back at the first sign of trouble. And guess what, Jack? I don't blame them. So that's the problem that happened. They should not be selling this to institutional, sorry, in retail investors.
Yeah, it really is not fit for retail investors.
No,
Very
it's
well
not.
said. Well, Locks, I this was fantastic again, and this is like the fourth or fifth time we've done this, and you're being vindicated in real time. This breakdown in private credit is exactly what you've been warning us about. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing your work with us. Once again, folks, you can see Locks's work at the Unicus Investor. I put a link down below to her Substack. Highly recommend that. They do fantastic work over at Unicus. They are watching out for retail investors. They're one of the few outfits that's actually doing that while everybody else is trying to prey on them. So, Lox, thank you very much. I'll give you the last word before we call it a day here.
Thank you so much, Jack, for having me and to everyone. We suggest retail investors not to short because it's a very risky endeavor. We are not saying, oh, short, make more money, just like institutions. No, shorting is such a volatile game. Institution investors can bear the risk, not retail investors. Invest your hard-earned money in a responsible manner. You're welcome to check out our newsletter to follow the day-to-day markets where things are going. Just to final thoughts, we do not share our short ideas or research on Substack. We do not share them for compliance reasons and the reason that short ideas are not a good fit for retail investors.
And this hairline, I think, is living proof, or should I say dying proof of that. Being short can be very stressful, folks.
Is.
Locks, thanks again so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. Welcome back anytime. Everybody else, until next time, live small and dream big.
Thank you. Thanks, Jack.